Talk delivered in March 2005 on the occasion of the seminar, Service is the Only Concern of the Serf, printed in Bodhyanti Parasparam, Volume 4, Chapter 16.
We know it is Lord Krishna who brought in the role of devotion or bhakti into the form of Raja Yoga he introduced in the Bhagavad Gita. Our master also has accepted this as a very useful means for attaining perfection through his system called Natural Path. We may also remember that Sage Patanjali did not bring in devotion as a step in his system of yoga. Bhakti, as has been expounded in our holy tradition, as well as in all the religions, is invariably linked with the concept of a God person. It is very difficult to have bhakti or worship of a non-person God. Is God a person or not is a question that need not concern us if we are talking about moving towards the infinity or nothingness. Therefore, one may be tempted to conclude that there is no need for us to bring in the concept of worship or prayer into the practice, and one may feel that the commandment too of the Master is not necessary for the practice. This, however, is the approach of many new systems that are being propounded by pseudo-masters who are growing in number like mushrooms. As a matter of fact, this is a very practical aspect of our sadhana where we find it difficult to articulate to ourselves as to whom we should worship and pray for our spiritual elevation. The form of prayer given to us reads, O Master, Thou art the real goal of human life, and also Thou art the only God and power to bring us up to that stage. Three concepts, namely God, power and Master, are brought into the prayer, and we are told further that prayer is a sign of devotion. Master adds that it shows that we have established our relationship with the Holy Divine. Thus we find we have got the fourth concept, Divine, being introduced. Now it is pretty difficult to understand when we are told that when the idea of Divine Mastership is established, our position turns into that of a serf, and that then our only concern is service. Many aspirants like to bring in an amalgamation of all these four into one, our beloved Master Sri Ramchandraji Maharaj of Shahjahanpur. However, this also poses problems as he is not available in the physical plane now, and the concept of Master being eternal has not got etched in many hearts, though sincere efforts for the same cannot be denied. Our tradition says that God is really all-pervading, above the mind, without features, imperishable and infinite. How can such a one be worshipped? That is why, out of compassion for his creatures, he takes the form of the Guru. The Guru is the Supreme God, enclosed in human frame. He walks the earth, concealed, bestowing grace on his disciples. Further, our own Master has stated that he considered his Master as the only object worthy of worship, and said he did not find God helpful in his pursuit except that he has given him such a Master. He expressed his feelings echoing the earlier saints who sang, He is the only adorable one to me, I have none other. My tongue has left off impure words, it sings his glory day and night. Whether I rise or sit down, I can never forget him, for the rhythm of his music beats in my ears. All this makes us think that Revered Ramchandraji Maharaj of Shahjahanpur is the Divine Master, God and power, who needs to be worshipped and devoted to. This position appears to be simple and straightforward, but the difficulty is the form and person of that Master who lived and moved with us in the physical plane is not available even to those who saw and moved with him during his lifetime, not to speak of those who never saw him. Condemned as we are to the photographs which are two-dimensional shadows of his, our worship and devotion ends with the attention we give to such pictures and portraits, decorating the same with garlands and offering such prasad as we consider feasible. The days of making three-dimensional idols for him may not be too far off, as we observe such a trend in many persons who are also his disciples. We seem to get into the trap of idolatry unwittingly. If this is not the position, one tends to think that someone designated or claiming as a successor or nominee or spiritual representative dawns in the horizon as the living master, whatever those words may mean. And those who are satisfied with substitutes are happy and get along with their sadhana with such pace and direction as their wisdom warrants. Service to such a master also is considered as service, and one is asked to worship and get devoted to him. Except that such a service is also a service to a fellow being, there appears to be no other merit in the same. In such cases, the problem of loyalty and service to the institutions also claim our attention, and the ills of the same are as many as the misfortune of the aspirant may permit. One needs to guard himself from the problems that emanate from gurudom and institutional tyranny in the name of discipline and obedience. But in such situations, we need to note that it is actual experience that is the real teacher. However, experience is a hard teacher, because she gives the test first and the lesson afterwards. It is in this context we need to appreciate the efforts of the Institute of Sri Ramchandra Consciousness to project the concept of the Supreme Personality of the Master, who is supreme because he has no form and name, and it is his consciousness which is eternal and sanatana. The need to understand this is of paramount importance if the sadhana has to go on smoothly, particularly the higher and rarer realms of consciousness. We are told by Master, and all sciences are agreed on this fundamental concept, that out of original stir, call it by whatever name we choose to, the whole of creation, and if we prefer the word evolution, has come into being. All existence owes its origin to that original stir. For the question, from where did this original stir commence? The first person who put this question, the famous philosopher Saint Gargi, to sage Yajnavalkya, also gave the answer that it is self-created or Swayambhu. Despite all the advancement in knowledge through science and otherwise, we are no wiser so far as this question is concerned. It is now widely recognized by all well-meaning thinkers that the spirit in action that originally threw itself outward to create a vast morphogenetic field of wondrous possibilities is the same principle of love, certain times called as Eros or Kshov or Stir or Shakti or Bhuma. What does it matter what name we call it? We call that original impulse. It is loving and all-consuming. Without it, nothing is. Out of itself, as life it began. Out of itself, as matter it continued. Out of itself, as mind it began to awaken. That is why Master states, our mind is of the same nature as the Kshov, and urges us to respect it, honor it, utilize it, and finally know our origin. The same spirit in action differentiated itself into modes of the good and the true, and the beneficial, and the beautiful, as it continued its evolutionary drama. And it is now the same original stir that is finding itself moving into the realms of cooperative enterprise and integrative embrace of all in one. That is what our Master asserted in 1981 when he said, there is no question of separation, we are coming closer and closer. This is a message to all. And in 1982, he declared that cooperation is the life of coming events also. The same spirit in action is what I prefer to call the Master, the Supreme Personality. He is one with me, and one with you, and one with all. Without us, that spirit in action has no existence, and without it or him, we are not. It is the awareness of this origin and our being a part of that creative process of the spirit in action that brings in us the feeling of humility and the attitude of reverence to that one behind all manifestation. During prayer, this already existing inseparable link between us and the spirit in action, which we now call our Master, gets strengthened. Affinity breeds love, and the more the aspirant advances towards this unity, the greater the closeness one gains with the all-pervading spirit in action or Master. Obviously, the closeness that we develop has no limits, and the embrace with it is continued till it becomes all-consuming. Master has a revealing, or should be called concealing, method of conveying when he said, "The relationship comes to us by inheritance." The concept of inheritance here is very heavily loaded and is pregnant with meaning when we contemplate. There we find the clue to our real origin. Once we are aware of the responsibility that is cast on us because of this inheritance, we understand fully the need and urgency to participate in service. The role of the serf gains meaning in the cosmic context. Service would then mean keeping ourselves pure first, so that it radiates the inherent and essential fragrance of the spirit in action. Such an effort to radiate the fragrance of the spirit from the core of one's being alone is entitled to be called divine. Divinity has meaning only in service. One choosing not to serve has no possibility of growing into the divine status. Thinking good of others, parahita, and granting comfort to others, parasukha, are the characteristics of the divine, is accepted by all traditions. The condition of Prabhu, where Master says that the aspirant feels his share in creation, gets understood only when we view the matter from this perspective. Other ideas of such conditions are imaginary and most of the time illusory. Master writing about service brings in the example of Prince Bharata of the great epic Ramayana. He wrote that he never allowed his heart to be contaminated with anything but the esteem, regard, and devoted worship to the Master. He added that this example must be kept in view for maintaining the relationship, which is the true form of devotion. He did not use the word may, instead he used the word must in this correction. Bharata, before starting his work as a deputy of Rama, as per Valmiki Ramayana, said, "This kingdom is Rama's. For the time being, he has asked me to be in charge. In my brother's place, I have installed his sandals. Deriving my authority from them, I shall do my work as king." According to the Hindu scriptures, one should serve the world unselfishly and without attachment, leaving the fruit of one's work at the feet of the Master. This altruistic way of life, of service, is the best form of service to the Master. This is the same concept of working without undue attachment that Master wants us to practice. According to tradition, it is held that jnana and bhakti will automatically grow by the contemplation of the personality of Bharata. Surely it requires a reverential imagination to recreate the character of Bharata. We must remember that we bring with us into this world as our inborn gifts some wisdom and reverence. This gift is always in us, and though sometimes obscured by prejudice or passion, it keeps alive the divine in man, which prevents him from reeling back into the beast. This double nature in us has been recognized by all yogis, and Lord Krishna based his yoga on understanding this dual nature in us, appealing that we should always endeavor to be wise, subduing the lower nature. Such wisdom can make us follow the example of Bharata. The spirit of Bharata's character can be understood when we remember that the great epic starts with the poem Manishala. The sage Valmiki stops a hunter from killing a bird. The setting of the story indicates the approach of the epic dharma. It is cooperative existence, not only in the realm of earth, but in the entire cosmos, rather than the principle of ahimsa that the Hindus believed in. We are one, and the welfare of the other is my welfare, is the basic philosophy that is sought to be taught through the ages. This awareness of the inherent coherence of all existence is the basis of any spirituality worth its name. Service then is no service to the other, but service to our own spirit in action. We need to keep the environment clean so that spirit in action is clean and healthy to cover greater frontiers. The Brahman is ever growing and is not a static being, as many confuse. We should not injure others lest we injure ourselves is a lesson that is being taught down the ages. They hurry to pick up sticks to burn the hemp that is taught in the children's rhymes. He is totally self-centered, not minding how it affects the other portion of our own self. By this we gain a capacity to resonate with all existence, and then later communion is a matter of our original nature. Intercommunion is not between two separate entities, but between our existence and the prime cause of our existence. If we understand the nature of existence and its interconnectedness, we automatically gain interconnection and develop the capacity to intercommunicate with resonance. We need to tune in to the original impulse that created us along with all this existence. This is possible by being devoted and keeping reverential awareness of all that exists. That there is an order in all existence, which our tradition called Ritam, and there is a law of getting rewarded according to our deeds, law of karma, needs to be understood. Then intercommunion with any being or existence is not any miraculous capacity, but is our prime nature, gets understood. This is the foundation on which empathy and sympathy stands. For all this to develop, the primary requisite is purity of intention and purity in action. Then we find our master not far off to be worshipped, but close within our heart to be revered and honored. In the scheme of things, as we understand now, we all have a role to fulfill, a task to accomplish. We have a service to offer, designed by the very nature of our existence. Since this work is the expression of our outer manifestation, of the innermost depth of our being, we can become conscious of its definitive nature only when we become conscious of this depth within ourselves. That is the criteria to decide the development of true faith. True faith in us is brought about within us by a whole series of efforts and inner attitudes. And one of the essential conditions, if we want to achieve and maintain within ourselves these attitudes, is to devote a part of our time each day to impersonal action. Every day we must do something useful to others. Until we know the essential thing we are intended to do, we must find a temporary field of action which will be the best possible manifestation of our present capacities and our goodwill. We should commit ourselves to such tasks, knowing full well that they may be only stages in the direction of finding our real purpose of life. We thus gain a real understanding of our true nature and start losing the habit of referring everything to ourselves, and learn more and more to give ourselves more completely and integrally with greater love to all existence and persons. We find thus our horizons widen, and our duties become more numerous and clear. This is real service to the Master and our role as self. We find that the successive occupations or avocations we held before we became conscious of the definite form of our action points always to the same type and method, which is a spontaneous expression of our character, our true nature, and our own vibration. This discovery of the tendency is a matter of self-will beyond all outer selfish considerations. If however many reading their condition erroneously seek to serve the master, assuming the role of being the general manager of the universe, they are in the process sure to lose their peace of mind and also sense of direction. If however we have succeeded in abolishing our ego to a great extent, losing the sense of being the doer, the master or spirit in action utilizes our capacities for its purposes of growth and development or expression according to its cosmic and pan-cosmic plans. As soon as we have abolished within us all egoistic desires, all personal and selfish aims, we surrender to the inner spirit in action, which enables us to commune with the living progressive forces of nature. We have no personal choice in the work, and the work allotted is something that is particularly resonating with our inner nature and tendency or nature of vibrations, which has by now got totally cleansed and purified. The great participative enterprise started when we took our birth gains meaning and in a sense fulfillment. Master says such persons are utilized for nature's work with different statuses as is found necessary from time to time. The positions of service like Vasu, Dhruva, Dhruvadipati and Parishad are some of the designations that he has chosen to reveal in his book Reality at Dawn. When we keep in view spiritual elevation as the thing to be prayed for, the prayers for any selfish fulfillment of desires or wishes loses all meaning. Then prayer is not asking for what we think we want, but asking to be changed in ways we cannot imagine. The spiritual elevation that we seek for then does not bind us to any person or group of persons, or home or homes, and it becomes the doorway for growing into our own true nature. Our sustenance then is not in the company or home with which our petty self is worried, but we find our true sustenance in service, and through it we reach the eternal Brahman. But those who do not seek to serve are without a home, and in this world and hereafter, even as the Lord stated in the Bhagavad Gita, it is real devotion to serve. In fact, there is no other way to express our devotion to the spirit in action. All poetry and songs are but different forms of flattery, and we have found an excellent method of justifying such a flattery by saying the spirit in action or master loves flattery. The Lord Krishna said that like by loving him one comes to know him truly, then such a one knows his glory and enters into his boundless being. Such a one performs all his actions as service to the Lord. Our prayer then may take the form, O Lord, give me the strength to make me love fruitful in thy service, and give me the strength to surrender my strength to thy will with love. If we want to be a true worker for the divine or render service to the master, then our first aim must be to be totally free from all desires and self-regarding ego. All our life must be an offering and a sacrifice to the Supreme. Our only object in action shall be to serve, to become a manifesting instrument of the Divine Master or the Spirit in action in his works. We must grow in the Divine Consciousness till there is no difference between our will and his, no motive except his impulsion in us, no action that is not his conscious action in us and through us. Then we will understand that every selfless act is born from the eternal spirit in action or master. We then understand that he is present in every act of service. All life turns on this law. This is what we may consider as following the cosmic order or rhythm, and such of the persons who live in this type of consciousness can be considered as devoted. Consequently, whoever violates it, indulging in his senses for his own pleasures and ignoring the needs of others, can be considered as one who is squandering the gift of life. But those who realize the master or the spirit in action are always satisfied. Having found the source of joy and fulfillment, they no longer seek happiness from the external world. They have nothing to gain or lose by any action. Neither people nor things can affect their security. They are free from the state of forming samskaras. Service then done by them is not a binding one, but a liberating one. They are the ones who live in what I prefer to call Sri Ramchandra consciousness, or the consciousness of the spirit in action. I have a great conviction that as disciples of Sri Ramchandra Ji Maharaj of Shahjahanpur, we are the mighty brotherhood of peace and progress. Emerging first through the great mind of the spirit in action, we are ever watchful and strive to dwell above man's surging tides of conflict, discerning the activities of earth as currents and filaments of energy. We seek to draw together, interweave into the sacred pattern we have been shown by the Master who guides us all. We strive ever for unity. Our task is to harmonize those discordant notes that emanate from all four corners of the world, swelling the cacophonous voice of the sad world. Having our firm link with the Master, we acting as intermediaries, draw in to those ready to respond the energies they need from out of our heart and wisdom. Seeking to lead fellow brethren to enlightenment in the natural path of the eternal Master, we seek that they may glimpse the pattern of the plan of divine Master, dedicating every pore of our being in his service. We give a call to all to join us in our work for peace and live in this life divine. Silently through our intentional consciousness, which is clearly in resonance with the Master's will, we have the confidence that it is we who magnetize those centers where leaders of men gather to plan methods of international cooperation, to seek out paths of peace. With the universal prayer that we offer every day, there is a confidence that it is we who inspire the minds of the great men in the world for universal harmony and peace. The message of the Master that love and harmony alone will lead us towards the perfect world, which the leaders dream, is sought to be spread by us as real service to humanity. Serving thus, we ever seek to draw all men into our own brotherhood. We intend to reveal to them the foolishness of separation and all kinds of prejudice, and enable them to learn to live in bonds of harmony. All this is sought by us to be done, not with any intellectual arguments, but by prayer at the appropriate time, as prescribed in certain spiritual centers, identified and located with love and wisdom by our great Master. We are conscious that the Master is not limited to this holy land, but to the entire world. Therefore, we are striving to unite the spiritual wisdom of the East and the West through the universal power of Pranahuti, which sustains the universe all through. Such a service surely is dear to the Master, and that is the role of the serf that one understands in this natural path. Thank you.